Well, now, you can't stop progress, but today, there isn't.
In the past, there always seemed to be enough time and people to do the work.
Seems to me we could use some help.
Today, everyone has to spend more time on work.
Today, there isn't enough time.
Today, there aren't enough people.
Machines
should think.
People
should work.
Machines
should do the thinking.
People should do the work.
So I don't do much thinking anymore. I'm too busy working.
Today on the Asymptote Podcast, blog editor Allegra Rosenbaum brings us literature in transit, literature from the places in between places, where the rules and regulations that govern our lives disappear behind us, just as new ones loom up ahead. Allegra spent most of her life traveling, and with the help of Ezra Pound, Blaise Cendra, Augustine Ferdinand Maillot, and Tiju Cole, she tries to figure out what is going on in those moments of transition. This is the Asymptote Podcast. Before we start, Asymptote is a brand new for educators page on our site, as well as our latest 22-page educators guide in a newly expanded format featuring discussion points, creative and critical writing activities, themed lesson plans, writing activities, and suggestions of additional resources, all relating to pieces in our spring 2016 issue and designed to be adapted to a wide variety of classroom environments. You can download the guide at asymptotejournal.com/asymptoteforeducators. Okay, I'll let Allegra take it from here.
The apparition of these faces in the crowd, petals on a wet black bough. Ezra Pound's enigmatic words drift through my head from time to time when it comes to literature in transit. His two-line poem that I just read is titled In a Station of the Metro. Pound wrote these lines on a trip to Paris after riding the metro there. Examining the words closely, I know exactly what he means, and not just because I spent an entire year researching and writing about the Paris metro. The word apparition means a ghost, or ghost-like image of a person, but it stems from a Latin verb that loosely translates to appear. When I think of appearing, I can't help but also think of disappearing. That is the essence of transit. Ideas, poems, people, love, everything. It appears and it disappears. The apparition is fleeting, much like a trip on any form of transportation. It has a beginning that soars toward an end. What Pound is trying to focus on is that part in between the beginning and the end, but closer to the end. The petals are no longer on the blossom. They have fallen on the wet, black bough. The bough is black and wet because it is rotting, almost gone. Whether it's the Paris metro or any other method of transportation, I truly believe that we can all take something away from in-between moments. These moments are highlighted by transportation, high altitudes, and change. Transitions help us make light of suffering and past events that we couldn't see when we were standing still. I also have a personal stake in this type of literature, having spent a year researching the history and literature of the Paris metro system, along with riding the metro over and over again for field research. I personally think literature in transit gives us moments of enlightenment that we can't get anywhere else but in transition. It all started when my parents got divorced when I was 5 years old. My mother and I left my father and boarded a train that we almost missed. Even at five, I knew something was amiss. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, however. Les Cendrars does an excellent job of writing about how I felt that day. One of my all-time favorite moving pieces is his poem, Prose of the Trans-Siberian and the Little Jean of France. The poem focuses on its narrator, whose name is also Blaise. He is taking the Trans-Siberian Railway from Moscow across Russia to Manchuria in the early 20th century, a time of huge transition for most of the world. Why? Because the first sparks of technology are flying across the world. Railroads, subways, even flight are either on their way or here. Progress is becoming a global buzzword, and citizens and countries worldwide are wondering where this progress is, well, progressing. Let's take a look at a piece of Sandrart's poem. At this point in the poem, he's already on the Trans-Siberian and is having somewhat of a dialogue with his rather redundant seatmate, Jeanne. I'm on the road. I've always been on the road. I'm on the road with little Jeanne of France. The train does a somersault and lands on all fours. The train lands on its wheels. The train always lands on its wheels. Blaise, say, are we really a long way from Montmartre? A long way, Jeanne. You've been rolling along for 7 days. You're a long way from Montmartre, from the butte that brought you up, from the Sacré-Cœur you snuggled up to. Paris has disappeared with its enormous blaze. Everything gone except cinders flying back. The rain falling, the peat bogs swelling, Siberia turning, heavy sheets of snow piling up, and the bell of madness that jingles like a final desire in the bluish air. The train throbs at the heart of the leaden horizon, and your desolation snickers. Say, Blaise, are we really a long way from Montmartre? Troubles, forget your troubles. All the cracked and leaning stations along the way, the telegraph lines they hang from, the grimacing poles that reach out to strangle them. The world stretches out, elongates, and snaps back like an accordion in the hands of a raging sadist. Wild locomotives fly through, rips in the sky and in the holes, the dizzying wheels, the mouths, the voices, and the dogs of misery that bark at our heels. The demons are unleashed. Scrap iron. Everything clanks. Slightly off, the clickety-clack of wheels lurches, jerks. We are a storm in the skull of a deaf man. Say, Blaise, are we really a long way from Montmartre? I like to think of Jeanne's interruptions of Blaise's thoughts as stations on a train of thought. Blaise is a tad melodramatic in his narration. At first, the train is on the tracks, but it gets further and further away from them and transforms into storms, demons, and clanking. Sandrart parallelizes the distancing of Blaise's narration with the miles between Jeanne and Paris. The further and further the train goes, the further and further away Jeanne is from Paris, and the further Blaise is from Jeanne. It's not just a play on distances, it's also a play on familiarity. Blaise and Jeanne are on a train speeding far away from every familiar concept of home and comfort. Jeanne cannot forget Montmartre, Paris. Jeanne is stuck in the past, and Blaise is stuck in his mind. Transitions and change can have such strong effects on human natures, and each person's reaction can be wildly different. What Sandrart has captured is not only these reactions, but a very intimate moment in two people's quickly changing lives. Two petals on a wet black bough. My mother and I are 35 years apart, but we certainly are two similar petals, fallen from the same flower. When I was doing research in Paris, she came to visit me. I felt homesick during her entire visit, positively miserable. When I was dropping her off at the entrance to the metro at the end of her visit, I said I wish she had never come so that I wouldn't be so sad to see her leave. My mother laughed at me, gave me a hug, and told me that despite my never having read Proust, I sounded just like him. Then she disappeared into the depths of the underground. Proust never took the metro. He never left his house much. However, there is a certain wandering tone to his writing that gives the air of literature in transit. He can walk miles around Paris with his writing. Speaking of walking around cities, another excellent dynamic duo in transit consists of two people walking around an unnamed city in an excerpt from the collection of prose poems, Pixel Flesh by Agustin Fernandez Mayo, a Spanish writer and physicist part of the Nacía generation. The Nacía generation are a group of writers born in Spain around 1970 who want to revive Spanish literature. What I love about this excerpt is the focus on connections between things, not the things themselves. The narrator focuses on circles, circuits, cigarettes, items that bridge. Let's take a closer look. You didn't know the principle of least action, by which light, everything in general, seeks the quickest route to travel between two points. We circled the city, contradicting it as much as we could. We started at the end. In reality, we didn't move. We passed in front of a dig site, fiber optics, cables, 21st century communications. And I made a joke about the woman and the man they found holding each other in the excavation of Pompeii. The scene was in Journey to Italy. They found them while they were filming. Ingrid Bergman also had started crying then. Starting out from a memory equals starting from the end. Memories are constructed for the last day, even if their gene of past deceives us. In reality, we didn't move. And in that kinematic experience, we found excess, the beauty to reach what, getting to the end, made us into something more than a phrase for the end. Something more than a sonogram of a kidney, than an isotope. Than a point of light that didn't disappear because it never started out. Really, the shortest possible infinite route. Until 5 years ago, black holes were little more than a theoretical construct, a hypothesis for observations that could not be explained any other way. But now, for the first time, we can see how space-time bends and spins around a black hole. Not just vertically, there's another way of seeing things. Sometimes rain in all its extension is a gauze that doesn't fall, it just covers, at least when it doesn't poke holes. When what hurts is so wide that you can't see its curvature. When that instant is one of those gridded housing developments, ashy, sprouted from the Arizona desert in the service of a highway that no one drives by on anymore. But now you. I say you were crying and it was raining because I saw it in your eyes. But I didn't see it. I say we circled the city because its curvature seemed limitless to me. Because a person looks for what they don't have in order to destroy it. Because when we got to the port, we saw the boats I imagined us leaving in. Because the air was heavy, ionized in opposites. Because fiber optic cables were never more fiber and less optic. Because a ditch never was so completely ditch, more visceral, less mathematical. But more than anything, because rain and lava never were more equivalent matter, Ingrid Bergman also started crying when they found them. The structure of the piece consists of two prose poems surrounding a short poem in verse. The shape of this one excerpt alone mirrors the idea of connecting. The poem in the middle, a line segment, bridging two other forms in word space. Then there's the actual content, beginning with light and ending in lava and tears. Liquids of many forms appear during the piece. The interesting thing about liquids is that they become the shape of every apparatus in which they are contained. When a container is filled to the brim with the liquid makes the container whole. It literally fills the emptiness and connects the physical to the physical. Whether it's lava engulfing Pompeii or the tears that the narrator's companion is crying, liquids appear to be a metaphor for connection in Pixel Flesh. So why do I keep emphasizing connections and transitions? Because a connection like one in this prose poem zooms in on a micro moment. Micro moments tell us a lot about the bigger picture using a smaller piece of the puzzle. The bigger picture here is a dichotomy between modern technology, Lucky Strike cigarettes, fiber optic cables, new theories of black holes, and classic life, ports, Pompeii, and even Ingrid Bergman seems distant and gray, and the narrator is but an electron orbiting around the city with his companion watching progress. There's a lot going on in this prose poem, so much so that it's a bit overwhelming. When we move, we are often overwhelmed by the constant movement around us, especially in airports, train stations, or crowded cities. I currently live in Detroit, where there's little to no public transportation. People on the buses can manspread freely. Walking around the Motor City is not recommended by definition. Still, when I walk around wondering if I made the right decision to move to another city where I know no one, I can't help but be grateful for the empty moments I couldn't have in New York City. These moments would have been filled by a 24/7 work hard, play hard attitude. Alone, I have time to think and learn things I would never have been able to in a place where I have no free time. Teju Cole, in his novel Open City, presents a similar atmosphere. The protagonist in the novel is Julian, a psychiatry resident at a hospital in New York City. He's from Nigeria and doesn't know a lot of people in this vast, open city. He walks around it in the style of a Baudelaire flâneur, and sometimes he takes the subway. This is one of my favorite excerpts from the novel around the 18th anniversary of Julius' father's death. In later years, it was the date of the burial, not that of the death, that I marked as an anniversary. I almost always remembered the former, and on May 9th of this year, I was on the one train on the way to work when it came to my mind that he had been committed to Earth for exactly 18 years. In that time, I had complicated the memory of the day not with other burials, of which I had only attended a few, but with the depictions of burials. El Greco's burial of the Count Orgaz, Courbet's burial at Ornans, so that the actual event had taken on the characteristics of those images, and in doing so, had become faint and unreliable. I couldn't be sure of the color of the earth, whether it was really the intense red clay I thought I remembered, or whether I had taken the form of the priest's surplice from El Greco's painting, or from Courbet's. What I remembered as long, sorrowful faces might have been round, sorrowful faces. Sometimes in waking dreams, I imagined my father with coins on his eyes and a solemn boatsman collecting them from him and granting him passage. Death, the ultimate transition. Not totally lost, but perhaps mentally lost, Julian remembers his father's death, his connection to no longer existing on a moving train. The theme of memory here goes back to the problem of the fleeting. Memories change and fade, much like an apparition in a crowd. And while Julius can no longer remember the exact details of his father's burial, he has changed the memories to something much more eternal. Works of art. 18 years later, and the ground is no longer the ground in Nigeria, but the foreground in a painting. Between Teju Cole, Les Cendres, and Augustin Fernandez Mayo, I've only brushed the surface of literature in transit. There are so many more authors who emphasize the significance of the in-between, and a great place to start is PEN America's 18th issue, the theme, In Transit. But the next time you're on a plane, a train, or just walking aimlessly, take a second to lose yourself in the transit, and perhaps forget the point of origin and destination. Despite time moving straight ahead, you get to decide whether you turn left or right. As for me, my mother continues to be supportive, to push me forward, and forward I will go. I feel my passion for the literature in transit and the Paris Metro grow even stronger, tunnel vision. I only see what's ahead of me. The Metro, as historian Gregor Dallas puts it, takes you through a life cycle, beginning with life and ending in death. But in death, there is of course rebirth, a very Parisian theme, I would say. If we first clamber down into the catacombs of Paris, we soon realize how this term opens up into the life of the city. Its saints, its struggle for birth and the rights of children, and the process by which art is born in sculpture, in music, in cuisine, in literature, and even in philosophy. Rebirth, transition, and change. Transit is continuous, like the undulations of the sea, and as ephemeral as day. I can dive into its unknown waters and explore, or float in oblivion of what swims beneath me. Yes, forward I will go, into the soft yellow glow of a Paris night. Perhaps it is not Paris that is in the process of changing, but I that am in the process of changing.
And that's our show. Special thanks to Allegra Rosenbaum and our audio editor, Mirza Puritz. We'll be back next month. We hope to see you then. Ain't nobody gonna love me like the devil do. Well, I'm gonna get drunk in my gambling. I'm gonna be real dirty, gonna get real gone. And ain't nobody gonna love me like the devil do.